How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply.
Hey everybody, it's Heather. We have got several things for you guys this week. By now, you have probably heard that Alec Murdoch has been granted a new trial. We're going to bring you a full breakdown of the South Carolina Supreme Court decision later this week, as well as a look into the civil rights lawsuit he filed against the woman responsible for depriving him of his constitutional rights. I know, there's going to be another Murdoch trial. Can we believe it? So in advance of that, we want to set the scene. So we're bringing you this true crime headline segment from the Patreon archives. It was recorded back when the first Murdoch verdict came in. It's a peek kind of what we thought would happen in 2023, what we didn't know was happening behind the scenes that we'll tell you about when we cover the appeal. And we also want you to have an idea of what another trial is going to look like. So for a real treat, you can also head back to episodes 151 to 153 to hear our early coverage when we weren't even sure if Alec was the one who did it. And now with his murder conviction vacated and his attorneys are claiming there's new evidence that points to a third party, we're kind of all left with the questions, did he do it? I mean, he's technically no longer a convicted murderer. And will the Lowcountry ever see justice for the heinous murders of Maggie and Paul Murdoch? So we'll keep you all apprised as he moves toward his retrial. They're thinking it might be coming up here not too many months from now, maybe a year or less. But we'll get into all of that in our appeal coverage. So in the meantime, we hope you enjoy this walk back through time to our Murdoch trial recap that we recorded it. You know, it was our first true crime headlines after the verdict came out. So we were fresh off of all of our hot takes. So it'll be fun for you to compare, just how different we all thought back in 2023 versus 2026. So enjoy. Thanks for sticking with us and stay tuned for that appeal coverage later this week. In other news of shitty people we've covered who are now locked up, Alec Murdoch officially in his jumpsuit in jail.
Shaved head and all.
I'm sure you all have heard us on Freaky Friday. Alec Murdoch was found guilty of murdering Paul and Maggie. He 75 witnesses, 6-week trial, less than 3 hours of deliberation, convicted.
It was the conviction heard round the world. I was not surprised by the guilty verdict. I thought it might take them a little bit longer to come back with it, but within less than 24 hours, there were jurors on Good Morning America giving interviews saying all but two were from the second they started deliberation saying we think he's guilty. And then it only took 45 minutes for all the other jurors to convince those two holdouts that he was guilty, which is strange that you would be so after 6 weeks of arguments be like, I'm still not convinced. And then 45 minutes of, I guess, peer pressure is a real thing.
I don't even know. Well, because they said 9 were yes, 2 were innocent, and 1 was I'm on the fence. I think he could be innocent. And I think once they hammered in, he did not truly cry the whole time. They said that whatever it looked like on TV in the room, they said he was blowing snot and he was sniffling, but they said there were not tears that they could see. Mm-hmm. We might have seen more, whatever, if it zoomed in on cameras, but the jury is just physically in the room. And they said that on the stand and at the table that he did not seem like he was genuinely crying. They seemed like he was, one of the jurors said he was a good liar, but not good enough. I didn't see any true remorse or any compassion or anything. He never cried. All he did was blow snot. There were no tears. And so I think that when you go, well, I don't know, I might be not sure. I really don't think he did it. It was like, okay, well, he was at the he was at the kennel. Mm-hmm. He admitted he was at the kennel and he lied about being there and he knew to lie about being there because he knew what time he shouldn't have been there. Then you go, all right, you're right. My bad. I wasn't listening to that.
And when you put it that way, because, you know, they're told not to talk about the whole trial the whole time it's going on. So you haven't been able to like bounce everything you've learned off of each other until you start deliberation. So sometimes just talking it out, you might be like, you know what? I was kind of on the fence, but now you all make compelling points. That kennel video is what did it, man.
Yeah, and they all said that they were really compelled by his lying on the stand, well, having lied to the police on video and then coming on the stand and saying, yes, I lied. And just, they said, just hearing his voice in that kennel video, that many seconds close to it, they were like, that the two things, him testifying and the kennel video, locked it up. Which, our next point is, Alec has notified, his attorneys have notified the court, they're appealing his conviction. Will it be successful given those two solid pieces of evidence that sound like they were determinative for the jury are not what his attorneys are trying to appeal on? They're appealing on something else.
What are they appealing on?
They're appealing, they haven't said exactly yet. We'll see it when they make the filings, but likely what they will appeal on is allowing in the evidence of the financial crimes. And you would argue that it's more prejudicial than it was probative and had, but the problem is, for a reversible error, you have to convince the court that if the financial crimes information hadn't come in, they wouldn't have convicted him. And the jurors have said on every single morning show that they could go on, mm-hmm. that it was the kennel video and his own testimony.
Mm-hmm. So on that, by that account, it wouldn't matter if they were in or not, because that had nothing to do with the financial stuff.
And then, yeah, exactly. And the other possible point of appeal is there was a little bit of reference. I never thought, oh my God, shut up. But a little bit of reference from the prosecution pointing out that when police showed up on the scene, he didn't volunteer that he was at the kennel. So you have a constitutional mm-hmm. right to remain silent, not telling the police that. The part of that constitutional right is that the prosecution can't later use your silence against you. And so arguably, had he not testified, them saying, we have this video of him at the kennel, here's a video of him not mentioning that, wow, don't you think his silence is shady? But because you had him get on the stand and go, now listen, I was down there and I did lie about it, then I don't think that the prosecution bringing that up is reversible. They're not using his silence against him. He got up there and admitted he lied. And then the jury said, oh, yeah, it was that video that did it for us.
Yeah. His whole time on the stand, his attorneys look like they did not want him to be up there. I imagine that was a heated argument of, am I or am I not going to testify? But at the end of the day, it's his call. And seems like he's the one that did this to himself, by all accounts, because I do believe he killed them. I, for the longest time, I just couldn't wrap my head around that he killed Paul. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
If he didn't.
Oh, no. Yeah, he had to have, because especially given the kennel video and just his behavior and demeanor and the timeline of the phones. I think the timeline of the phones are really what sealed the deal as well. So if you had kind of this flimsy kind of a case and that they then let the financial crimes in, they did mention that he was silent, you know, as to being at the kennels and he didn't testify, I think you might have either gotten a hung jury or been able to reverse it on appeal. But I think he sealed his own fate by getting up there, and you have all this evidence now from jurors going, no, none of that. We didn't give a shit about the financial stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He lied, whatever.
It does still tickle my brain what one of the public defenders that was interviewed on Law and Crime, I think after the verdict, said of that he still doesn't think that Alec was the trigger man per se, but that he definitely was involved, and that perhaps it was someone down by the kennels that was there to scare Paul or something, or rough him up, and things went sideways. I still think that could be a possibility. If that is the case, though, I think in panic, Alec did pick up a gun and kill Maggie.
Yeah. It's hard for me because at first I thought, it's so brutal to kill your family like that. But this family, when you see, and now their items from Moselle are up for auction.
Oh, gosh. Keep going. Then we got to talk about that.
Yeah, but the significant, significant number of trophy game, and they have lamps made out of turtle bodies and stuff.
They've been proven fake, but they're very gross and weird.
But it's the type of thing that you have like that. I mean, the heads on the wall aren't fake. The horns, all that stuff. And then him going, yeah, we go out and shoot things and hunt and whatever. I'm not saying all hunters would ever do something like this to their family, but if you're thinking, being comfortable with a gun, being comfortable with being covered in blood, washing blood off and things like that. It's a huge leap to go from being comfortable with that to killing your family. But then if you look at the history that this family has, this is once we talk about the auction at the house, a segue into the next part of our headline here. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that this is a violent family, that this is a violent family that has committed violence in the past, that is okay with covering up violence, that will do violence if it means protecting what they think is the most important thing, which I think is money and prestige.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree with that. The only thing I wanted to say about the auction items is it just grosses me out when people want any type of murderabilia type of stuff. And yeah. I was reading this whole thing about the estate, you know, auction house that has these items. And the woman was like, people were lined up to get in here. You know, we've been getting calls. It leaked that we have the stuff. Everything's getting out. And it's just like, stop and ask yourself, why do you want to own that?
It's bad vibes.
It's bad vibes. It's every time you look at it in your house. I mean, you obviously think, oh, this came from that place. For the people that have that, I think that's what they want. But it doesn't sit right with me. And I hope that any money made from all of that is going to the victims, Gloria Satterfield's estate, Stephen Smith, whoever.
All the people that he stole money from, that's who it'll go to ultimately. Mm-hmm. It's the receivers will usually handle that. And then it's like Tom Girardi when his estate was up for auction and all those things. But you're right. It needs to get auctioned off because the families that he stole money from do deserve compensation. Mm-hmm. Did they have to put the monogram pillows, monogram facing out on the sofa when they took a photo of the sofa to sell it? Like in that case, you're like,
they know what they're doing.
We're fiduciaries. We need to sell this to the highest bidder. And they're not fiduciaries. But, you know, you think the receiver is a fiduciary to all the people that he's trying to gather money for. If he's like, sell it for the highest price. And they're like, we can get more money if we put that it's his.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that that's why. It's just, it's gross. But at the same time, if it's how you get money for the victims, you know, I don't know. It's a whole weird situation.
Sinisterhood will be right back. A quick message from today's sponsor, the ASPCA Health Insurance Program. If you've ever owned a pet, you know they run on their own logic. Jump first, think later, ask questions, never. It's part of what makes them so lovable, but it's also how you end up with those surprise vet visits you didn't see coming. ASPCA Health Insurance helps cover eligible vet expenses, so when those moments happen, you can focus on getting them the care they need without overthinking the cost of second-guessing your decision. When you enroll in an ASPCA Pet Health Insurance plan, you could get a $25 Amazon gift card. It's a little treat for you while you're doing something great for your pet. The plans are customizable to fit your budget and your pet's quirks, and it's been around nearly 20 years, helping almost a million pets. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/creepy. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/creepy. Eligibility restrictions apply. Visit aspcapetinsurance.com/amazonterms for more info. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance. Oh, yeah. And like you said, if that's, you're going to see that somewhere, it's going to give you that stomachache of like, oh, that's like a Murdoch thing. And don't, if you buy something, I don't know what you do with it.
If you're trying to get a turtle lamp to put in your study because you think, well, this money is going to victims. Okay. I think maybe there's a different way you contribute, just a GoFundMe or something. Yeah. I don't know.
But yeah, exactly.
If that's your thing, that's your thing.
It is some people's thing. Well, speaking of GoFundMe, Stephen Smith's family has recently set up a GoFundMe to help fund the private exhumation of his body. So in case you all have forgotten, the Alec Murdoch trial has brought in a renewed interest to the case of Stephen Smith. In 2015, 19-year-old Hampton County resident and nursing student Stephen Nicholas Smith was found dead on the side of the road in rural South Carolina. Now, Smith's mother, Sandy, is what, like we've seen time and again in a case where
A child has been killed and their parents become a warrior and their grieving has been stolen from them. 100% that is what happened here.
For sure.
Thank God for Sandy Smith that she found Mandy Matney. Thank God that she's now found Eric Bland and the Bland Richter Law Firm, because they're really working with her. And since day one, Mandy has been working with her, trying to get her story out, because this woman has been just sandbagged at every turn. Yeah. I mean, you think every time she thought, oh, well, this is a great development, it's been five steps back, one step forward, five steps back. And recently, a letter that she wrote to the FBI, TMZ put the letter in full out, and it outlined the series of events and I think shows the true depth to which the Murdochs really had their claws in the South Carolina system until about 2021, when this all happened with Maggie and Paul.
What are some highlights of the letter?
Some of the highlights, Sandy, she outlines what happened. And even in the first few hours that you get that gut-wrenching call that we think that your son has been killed, mm-hmm. they head down to the police station to identify Stephen. They receive a phone call from Solicitor Randolph Murdoch, Randy Murdoch, which is Alex's brother, who says, hey, you know, we're happy to help. I'm really sorry about what happened. We're interested in working pro bono as a liaison between the family and the investigators. And previously, Randy had represented Stephen's father, Sandy's ex-husband, in a civil litigation issue. So it wasn't like they totally didn't know each other, but who told them? Who told the Murdochs?
Yeah, that's a very ambulance chaser.
Yeah, it was very ambulance chaser. And knowing, having worked with them before and knowing, like she says in her letter over and over again, the Murdochs were the most powerful family where we were. We all knew it.
And she was from a lower income area, so she was disadvantaged in that regard.
And you hear, hey, this super wealthy, well-to-do, powerful lawyer says, I will work with you pro bono. Mm-hmm. You go, yeah, well, the help didn't last long. She writes in her letter, surprisingly, after just a few interactions, Mr. Murdoch stopped returning our calls.
Oh.
Then just days later, Stephen's twin sister Stephanie was approached, quote, multiple times by peers telling her that Solicitor Murdoch's nephews were responsible. So that made them very suspicious very quickly, because Randy immediately called them. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as these rumors come out, he became unreachable and just stopped responding.
Interesting. And did he make any public comments about why he ghosted them?
No, he hasn't come out. And I think the family was hoping that all this would blow over, and their hopes have been
all
dashed.
This would blow over. Our son was brutally killed and found, yes, on the side of the road, but all of this will blow over. Okay.
And that's the thing about the Murdochs, is with Gloria Satterfield, Stephen Smith, and all the people that Alec financially swindled, is I think they think, oh, these are just like poor people that
they're
don't
peons.
Matter.
Yeah, they don't matter.
They're nothing. They're just nothings that don't matter. And it's like everybody is somebody's everything.
Mm-hmm.
And oh man, Sandy Smith is not giving up, because this boy was her heart.
She shouldn't.
Well, her other son, Chris, which is Stephen's older brother, a week after that, after Stephanie was told, hey, the Murdochs were involved, a young man who Chris did not know showed up at Chris's work and told Chris, I was present when Stephen was murdered. I witnessed everything firsthand. Solicitor Murdoch's nephew, Buster, who graduated with Stephen, beat Stephen to death with a baseball bat because Stephen was gay. And then the witness told Chris that Buster and his friends had been all out smashing mailboxes when they came upon Stephen, and quote, Buster seized the opportunity.
So he was walking down the road?
Yeah. So Stephen's car with the gas cap open was found pretty far from, you know, from where he was.
Uh-huh.
So they think what Sandy goes on to say in her letter, as she reviewed where he was found and the crime scene and everything, she believes that he was beaten somewhere else, taken in Buster's vehicle, because they all said Buster was driving his own car that night, and dumped where he was found in the middle of the road. Because when he was found, the first responding officer, it's kind of suspicious what she found. And this is sad. This is like Ellen Greenberg's family or Daniel Robinson's dad, where they're having to go through and do this investigation themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So she said she reviewed the dispatch logs from the night, and she discovered that the first responding officer arrived on the scene within a minute of 911's dispatch, even though the incident report later stated he, quote, had driven around for a while looking for the body. So how If he had driven around for a while, the time that he actually arrived on the scene was only 1 minute from when 911 told him to go out there. Sandy thinks she knows why. She said, cops don't frequent that area. It's not likely that an officer, and then a second officer arrives within 2 minutes of the first one. She said, it is not a coincidence that they were there around 5 o'clock in the morning. It's not an area where cops are normally at. She says, I believe those officers were in the area, quote, because they already knew Stephen was there, and I suspect the Murdochs were the ones who told them.
So they were saying, hey, we've got a problem. Can you guys go take care of this?
So a person called 911 that night, was just a passerby that said, I see somebody laying out on the road. Now, my suspicion would be, if, let's just hypothetically speaking, if you've beaten someone to death, you transport their body somewhere where you're going to dump it. You have a very powerful family. You call them and say, this is what happened. They say, go home. This never happened. Tell your friends this never happened. Everybody forget about it. We'll handle it. Then you just put your head down and you finish school and you go off to school and you know. Then when you're the Randy and Alec, you would say, hey, can you go do a drive-by and just call 911 and say you happened upon this body? By the way, cops, we're about to do a call-in. You need to go find this body. He got hit by a car.
So you think that they, whoever called it in, was told to call it in?
I think so. I think
it was. Or maybe they didn't even actually drive by. It was just a call-in like, hey, this is there. I just saw it. Wink, wink.
I would suspect that, given the close relationship with the police. And I'm not saying that Officer Bridges or Officer Eubanks were in on the total scheme, because when you're scheming and running shit, you really don't tell every single person what's going on. They might have just been told, y'all need to go around that road and just wait for
a
call.
See what's going on.
There'll be a call. All you have to do is just call in for backup. You're about to go discover something. Don't worry about it. And that might, that might have been what happened and why they arrived so quickly after the 911 call.
So I've always thought that maybe Stephen's car ran out of gas. He started walking down the road to find gas, and then Buster and his friends drove by and saw him and, like his friend said, seized the opportunity. Is that how they're saying they happened upon him, or that they found him at another place?
He was 3 miles away from his car. So he was found in the middle of the road, 3 miles away from where his car had been. Sandy points out in her letter that there was no blood spatter on the crime scene area, despite his brutal beating, which makes it clear he was transported to that site. And she said that Stephen was, quote, very skittish and would not have gone walking very far along a road for fear of being seen. She said also, if his car had run out of gas and he was in it, that if somebody approached that he didn't know, he wouldn't have opened the door or window. But if he did know them, which he knew Buster, they had gone to school together, mm-hmm. and possibly more, given this other allegation in the letter, that she said he would have opened it for somebody that he knew. But she said, given that he was negative for drugs or alcohol, so if, let's say he's in his right mind, he's operating as he normally does, she said that he would not walk around that the dark road at night. She said he had been known to walk several miles through the woods to get home just to stay off of roads, and he didn't want to be seen and was shy. You know, like skittish is the word she used.
So was there blood found at his car?
No, there. Sandy's big push is that she wants the FBI or SLED or whoever to investigate Buster's car, because he, wherever what happened to Stephen happened, that, you know, one would assume it would be somewhere near his car, but who knows if someone came and hosed that off and then called the cops, and that, you know, mm-hmm. if they went and cleaned that crime scene up. But she
could
said
have also made it, staged it to make it seem like he ran out of gas and maybe they just ran him down on the road or something, or flagged him down or acted like they were even his friends, you know, to lure him into something.
Exactly. And it, however they lured him out of his car. Yeah. Why the gas cap was open, it could have just been staging.
Decoy.
Yeah. But she said that suspiciously, Buster, quote, had gotten rid of his old vehicle fairly quickly mm-hmm. after the incident. And that's critical, because the witness who approached Stephen's older brother said, we were all there that night. We were traveling in Buster's car.
Can
when
you
it all
imagine
happened.
the brazenness with which you're like, I'm going to beat the shit out of somebody with a baseball bat in front of multiple witnesses because I know I'm going to get away with it. That's insanity.
Well, that's how bad it is with the Murdochs. And I don't think it would be out of the realm of possibility that you would get out of it, given that Sandy was approached by a person who had, you know, had been in that the Low Country for a while. She said in September of 2015, quote, "A gentleman claiming to know about a criminal case from decades ago that was swept under the rug to protect a different member of the Murdoch family approached her and gave her information like, hey, they killed somebody else back in the day and they got away with it for this long. Yeah. I'm sorry. And Sandy said, sadly, in her letter, quote, I see history repeating itself with my son. No one here is trying to solve our case. Mm-hmm. Because you see the tentacles get in. So that was the really hard part about reading her letter, which this was a letter from her to the FBI imploring for help, because initially, you know, okay, well, police are on the scene. Well, she said, because it was that technically that area of road was highway, it became highway patrol. So she's like, oh, great. Maybe they're out of the Murdoch grasp. Mm-hmm. But she said every time the investigation got down to narrowing it down who it was, well, we've hit a wall. Mm-hmm. The investigation stalled. We're so sorry. So she said, okay, well, another agency would take over and then they would get, she'd get helpful. And she said she even wrote Governor Nikki Haley in September of 2015 to who her credit responded promptly, assigned new investigators to the case. But exact same thing happened again. You get close, you get close, you get close. Well, the investigation stalled. So we've exhausted our leads. Sickening. There's no more leads. Oh, it's so sickening. And knowing that this is a family who doesn't have the means to go, well, we're going to hire private investigators. Mm-hmm. We're going to get the body exhumed. We're going to do this. And the exhumation is vital because, and this is where I think you're going to have, it's already cracked, this whole Murdoch chokehold on this area. But you have an accusation against a doctor that completed the autopsy on Stephen Smith. The implication in this letter is that she was complicit in the cover-up. The allegation is Dr. Aaron Presnell of MUSC, who performed Stephen's autopsy, instantly ruled it a hit and run and said, well, the investigators told me that he got hit by a car, so obviously it was a hit and run. Well, the investigators that were present for the autopsy have now both gone on record and said, we never made any mention of a car. We came in here. All of his injuries were around his head, his, you know, above the shoulders. Car accident, if someone's been hit by a car, they're generally from the waist down. You're going to see leg crushing, broken mm-hmm. legs, broken pelvis. Stephen did not have that. And so when...
Yeah, how do you get only injuries on your head from getting hit by a car?
You don't, is what it turns out. And apparently when the highway department investigator Todd Proctor asked Dr. Presnell, hey, like, what's up with these findings? This doesn't, I've done a million hit and runs. This is physically impossible. Dr. Presnell, quote, was combative with the highway department investigator regarding her findings. And whenever Todd Proctor asked Dr. Presnell how she came to her conclusion, she said, quote, it was because he was found in the road. That alone was the reason.
Well, that's not a good enough reason for me.
No, well, Drew Thornton was found in a man's driveway. Yeah. That doesn't mean that somebody rolled. Someone must have hit him with a car. Well, he's got a parachute on his back.
Yeah.
We might want to look at some other factors here. But just to go, it was hit and run. So for this Dr. Presnell, you better speak up, lady. You better say something. Because, and I get it that it might be like, they told me I was going to get fired or I was going to get transferred if I didn't. That's all well and good. If you were forced to be complicit, it's now's the fucking time.
It should
time
come
to
out
say
from
something.
You. You got to get ahead of it. Because if it comes out on the stand, Alec Murdoch style, because you only admit you lied because you're forced to, it looks real bad.
The best time to tell the truth right away and the next best time is as soon thereafter as you can, because they're going to catch her. The other issue is with the phone. They were playing hot potato with his phone this whole time. She would say, well, have you checked? They're like, oh, well, we have to send it to Apple and then Apple will get into it and then months will go by. And she'd say, well, did you send it to Apple? What'd they say? Oh, well, it didn't get sent. Sorry. So that's a concern that she said that she's concerned that they've deleted, quote, critical information, if they haven't already, that they will now, knowing that it's getting the heat is on. And she said flat out in the letter to the FBI that Stephen had told her that he was romantically involved, quote, with someone from a prominent family in the county who was hiding his sexuality. He said it would shock people to know this person was gay. We suspect this could be the young man Stephen was referring to, though he never named them, talking about Buster.
Yeah.
Sinisterhood will be right back.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T&Cs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And Buster has since come out, and his attorney has made a statement.
Yes. Led first came out and said, we're investigating this. Because I think once the verdict came out in the Paul and Maggie case, Mandy Matney, the media, everybody, Sandy Smith, everybody that is following this case and wanting to see justice done has said, what about Stephen Smith? And finally, Sled came out and said, we are treating this as a homicide and we are treating this as an ongoing homicide investigation. Sandy Smith said, I've been waiting on this for 8 years. Eric Bland was excited. Buster Murdoch, not as excited. Nah. He said the following. I've tried my best to ignore the vicious rumors about my involvement in Stephen Smith's tragic death that continue to be published in the media as I grieve over the brutal murders of my mother and brother. I love them so much and miss them terribly. I haven't spoken up until now because I want to live in private while I cope with their deaths and my father's incarceration. Before, during, and since my father's trial, I have been targeted and harassed by the media and followers of this story. This has gone on far too long. These baseless rumors of my involvement with Stephen and his death are false. I unequivocally deny any involvement in his death, and my heart goes out to the Smith family. I am requesting that the media immediately stop publishing these defamatory comments and rumors about me. Buster Murdoch.
Interesting.
So he's alleging that he had nothing to do with it, no idea. Dick Harpootlian and Jim Griffin they're like, the media keeps saying Buster was involved. The media, usually when they mean that, they mean Mandy Matney. To her credit, every time Mandy covers this, she says, who killed Stephen Smith? We want to know who it is. Mm-hmm. And like a good journalist, much like it should be a good investigator, you say, I want to look at all the evidence and see where it leads us, not this foregone conclusion. We'll just cram everything to fit. And I think Sandy Smith's the same way. She's like, it could be Buster. It could be someone else. I don't care who it is. I just want to know who did this and what happened.
During the press conference after the conviction with Jim Griffin and Dick Harpootlian, I thought it was bizarre that when they were complaining about, or, you know, saying how they were going to appeal because everything was let in, Dick Harpootlian says in his ill-fitting sunglasses, like, they let in everything. The only thing, or it may have been Jim Griffin, the only thing that didn't get brought up was Stephen Smith. And I'm like, why are you saying that? Because you're implying that there is a connection here and that they just didn't bring that up.
Well, and they're loose for lawyers, the things that they're willing to say on the record. I think that their number one thing is their own ego and appearance on TV. And then, oh, fuck, I shouldn't have said that. Like Dick Harpootlian, what did he say?
And
then
he said
a slur and then said, yeah, I'm an old man. I can say that. And you're like,
he didn't say, no, he said, are we allowed to say that? I don't think that's PC. Sorry, I'm old. He didn't say he should be allowed to say it, but he did try and justify he said it because he was old. Although he did pretty quickly recognize, should all of that have happened with like 40 cameras in front of him? Probably whoops. Not.
Whoopsie, whoopsie, whoopsie. Well, I wonder if they will be the ones that either defend Buster in criminal proceedings or try to pursue defamation.
If I was Buster, I would not be hiring them to represent me after seeing what they did with my daddy's case.
No, if you want to hire somebody just like them, going on the Ringling Brothers, Barnum and Bailey, and get a couple other clowns, because I don't think they would be able to handle this. I don't think anything that I've seen so far would rise to the level of defamatory. And in fact, I wonder if he's just saying that to try to scare people off, not knowing that if he does do a Johnny Depp, Amber Heard, you know, if you start to get into a defamation lawsuit, a bunch of stuff comes out, mm-hmm. you know, because the truth is the defense. And so if you want to go after, especially a news outlet, although media outlets kind of have a fair reporting doctrine that you can, it's different standards and whatnot. If you say, like, sources have told us that Stephen Smith was beaten to death by Buster Murdoch is not the same as saying, I'm telling you that this is what happened and now you sue me for defamation. You're like, I'm reporting on a source literally told me that, and you don't have to reveal who your sources are. So Buster can be mad about the reporting and mad about the investigation, but it continues on.
I think that, like with the Kristen Smart case, now that people have seen, oh, they can be taken down, mm-hmm. he's in prison now, that hopefully there's a little more forthcoming with information and people are willing to break their silence because they know that the mighty can fall.
Definitely, and especially in this case, the sled, indeed, the people who were investigating it now on the record in their statement regarding treating this like a homicide kind of said as much. They said, agents working on the Stephen Smith case hope that those who may know what happened to Mr. Smith are more willing to speak freely now than they may have been in 2015 or 2021. If you have any information regarding the death of Stephen Smith, please call SLED at 803-737-9000 and ask for investigative services. You can also submit tips via email at tips@sled.sc.gov.
Well, I hope that tips are submitted and that that family can get closure as well and he can receive justice.
Definitely. It's heartbreaking that it's taken this long, but with a family that had a grip like that on the legal system, I think it was going to, it's like a little thread. And once you pull it and then it starts to unravel.
It all because, came down real quick.
Yeah.
If Buster gets prosecuted and convicted for this, and then he, his father, are both in prison, and then Maggie and Paul have been brutally murdered. My God, just think about this family 3 years ago and how different it all looked.
Yeah, that photo that they keep showing of them, you know, where they're in their tuxedos yeah. with their little cummerbunds and all together. I'm like, you had no idea that that photo would be in People magazine and mm-hmm. Good Morning America for the worst case scenario of what reason. But I hope for Sandy Smith that she gets justice. And whoever the person is that approached her in September of 2015 about whatever this old case is, there's no statute of limitations on murder. I hope that person comes forward mm-hmm. to SLED too. And really everything, that's the light of day, baby. Justice.
Skeletons coming out this closet, and it is a big old closet.
Yeah, it's a lot to unravel, and let's hope for, and I think Gloria Satterfield's family also said they're willing to have her body exhumed for signs of any foul play, although the only witnesses in her case were Maggie and Paul, who
are no longer with us.
Yeah, so this is the beginning of a very long end for the Murdochs, it sounds like.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And a good way to wrap this up. Well, thank you for the updates and the legal analysis. If anything more comes of this, of course, we'll keep everybody updated. Thank you all so much for supporting the Patreon. We could not do this without you. If you were in the getting into it or ruling the airwaves tiers, make sure you join the Facebook group. Make sure that you register for the upcoming Q&A on the 29th at 8 p.m. and the bonus content live stream on the 31st at 2 p.m. We're doing it during the day to accommodate international listeners. If you're in the U.S., you get your weekend started a little early with us.
Yeah, a little Friday afternoon fun.
Mm-hmm. It was super fun doing it on Friday last time. So looking forward to it. Well, thank you so much for all your support. We could not do this without you. Stay safe, stay healthy, and keep it creepy.
Wah-ha-ha.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.